Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Thank you, Em. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available as a podcast, obviously. It's also available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Sometimes the old intros seep into the show from time to time. We will grab a pencil. We will talk about cinema gasps in a little bit. We'll also go around the horn, and we'll also celebrate the fact that it's drive-in season finally opening up. So we'll talk about what's happening at the Tibbs and at the Skyline. Yes, friends, I went to John Wick Chapter 4. where to begin? Love the first John Wick film. A new level of action that we had not seen before. I have to give Chad Stahelski, the director. This is, of course, the gentleman who was the stunt coordinator on The Matrix, and that started the relationship with Keanu Reeves, I believe, and led to these films. And Derek Kolstad, who I guess is credited as a writer on all four films. So there's a consistent factor there. But I have to congratulate the John Wick franchise because they finally got to make a video game film, basically a video game with human beings. And yes, there's some green screen work in there, obviously. But the fact that you especially the selling point of especially the first John Wick film are, and I've talked about this for years as far as action films. You get to see actual human beings fighting actual human beings as a stunt, but really well done. It's not close-ups. It's not, for the most part, stunt people. That's Reeves doing his stuff there, for the most part that I know. It's like I've said before with monster movies. If you're going to have two behemoths, I'm much more preferable. I have a bigger preference to two guys in rubber suits fighting each other back in the 70s because you could see it. You put the camera back. It's not close up, close up, close up, close up. So anyway, congratulations. You made a video game out of with human beings. I have to give you that. 2 and 3 are a blur. Halle Berry's in one and horses are others and there's rules are broken and there's betrayals and then there's reconciliations and that happens in 4 as well, all leading up to this, and also the fact that the great suits, the great locations, and the fact that they consistently keep these set of rules and you have to follow the rules of culture. And it's not a lot of yelly screamy. It's mature assassins and fighters and all that sort of thing. So that is, I just don't know if I needed 4 of them. And also this John Wick Chapter 4 is almost 3 hours long. Almost 3 hours. I've been to Shakespeare plays shorter than John Wick Chapter 4. I saw a show last week that was about the same running time. Much more action than this one. This has no business being that. And apparently there are rumors already swirling that when it comes out on video, there's going to be a 4-hour cut. Have at it, friends. Not for me. There are two... Well, okay, I will give the film this. At least it's not John Wick Chapter 4... Part 1, you know who you are. I've said this before, and I went back to with Potter, with the Harry Potter film, the last Harry Potter films. You have a solid enough fan base a loyal enough fan base that they will sit through a three and a half hour conclusion as opposed to splitting it up. You all know what you're talking. You know who I'm talking about as well. So the fact that I'm like, okay, it's three, fine. always good to see Clancy Brown. And not giving away a whole lot, and although I wrote about it on Facebook and Twitter yesterday when I went to it, the presence of Clancy Brown, that's always good. That just makes a film better. He kind of represents the spaghetti western portion of the film, which I won't give away. There is an homage to the Warriors that honestly I did not see coming, and it involves a DJ and music. And, yeah, so that had to make, I saw this in a theater at 3 o'clock yesterday with about 12 other people. And I'm the only one laughing rigorously over the Warriors reference. So, cause I'm an old guy. But yeah, there is, so not to give away a whole lot in the plot, but there are scenes shot in the desert. We didn't need the horse scenes at the beginning, but it's Osaka, Berlin, Paris. I don't think he needed the Berlin part. I know that's what it felt like an Avengers film, where in order for us to get to Paris, you have to go and do this thing first in Berlin. The Osaka scenes, and it felt like you had to see John Wick literally kill every single person who came after him, and he's not there. There are other folks there. Donnie Yen shows up, of course, and there's a new gentleman. Well, the guy with the dog shows up, and that's the other thing. For you fans of Chekhov plays, you see a dog at the beginning of John Wick Chapter 4. What do you think's gonna happen? And sure enough, it does. But Shamier Anderson shows up as Tracker with a dog. So it's not, he doesn't take down everybody, but it just feels like the majority of the people there. So then, and that sequence is too long, and the whole Berlin sequence is too long, and then we get to Paris, and it's, again, I don't want to give away a whole lot, but there's a sequence with a set of stairs. I know it made the audience laugh. It also kept the film longer. So I understand why they did it. You didn't need to do it. So I'm still recommending the film. I guess for lack of if I have to give a grade on it, which I don't, it's like a B-. You know, it's the action scenes are still cool. There is a moment in the Champs-Élysées, and it's interesting that when it's a location you've been to, my wife and I did a week in Paris and a week in London for our honeymoon. So the fact that we've been at the Arc de Triomphe and the Champs-Élysées, it just makes me giggle. So, and this is it, right? I don't know. I think they're going to make a ballerina offshoot. I don't know. I don't care. I got through these four, and I'm not grinding my teeth. And this is me not grinding my teeth, friends. So, yeah, it's obviously flawed and too long, but it's still a fun ride. There's a scene that kind of sums it up. I'm the only one laughing in this, where Ian McShane, the great Ian McShane, returns again as Winston, as the manager. And there's a scene where he is walking, because we have this new nemesis that wants Wick killed. Played by Bill Skarsgård, Marquise. But there's a scene where Winston meets Marquise in a museum, and the museum is so large. You just see Ian McShane walking for what feels like a minute. It's probably 30 seconds, but it just made me giggle that he's still walking. I think the Lord of the Rings people would have giggled over how much walking he had to do in this scene. So that kind of sums it up as a whole. It's a 30-second walk that could have been 15. You have a pretty decent slam bang John Wick Chapter 4 that's almost 3 hours long that would have been just fine at 2.5. So there you go. I saw this. Now I'm done. Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. And shout out to Lance Riddick, who of course plays the concierge, and he passed away on scrolling. I think it was like they weren't able to get the tribute into the film itself, but he had passed away recently, and nice gig to play this. But credits for him for Lance go all the way back to the mid '90s. One of the first films he did was playing an FBI agent in The Siege. Was in I Dreamed of Africa, Don't Say a Word, Bridget, Brother to Brother, Dirty Work, The Way of War, Tennessee, Jonah Hex. God, that's, I don't know if we want to revisit that. Won't Back Down, White House Down, Old Boy, that's the Spike Lee version. Faults, as we mentioned, of course, John Wick is the hotel manager. So, yeah, and a lot of TV, a lot of television. So, Angel Has Fallen, that's right, he was David Gentry in that as well. So, One Night in Miami as Kareem X, Godzilla versus Kong. So, quite the career. And ending, obviously, oh, wait, there's 7 upcoming credits. Great, he is in Ballerina. A White Man Can't Jump remake? Okay. Kane Mutiny Court Martial. Okay, that actually I would like to see. Saint Sebastian, Apparados, Percy Jackson and the Olympians. That's a series, I believe. And my favorite 70s soul band, Shirley and White Man Can't Jump, according to IMDb. So salute to Lance Riddick. Thank you for your work, sir. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I want to get to a couple of videos that I watched recently. Then we'll get to some Cinema Gasp. I keep forgetting, and I'm sorry I keep forgetting to bring this up, but I was really happy that Hollywood Shuffle got the Criterion treatment. And by the way, did you get your Criterion order during the 24-hour 50% off flash sale? I did. Hitchcock's Spellbound. Notorious. I'm getting Notorious. So hopefully that'll arrive today. We'll see. What has been cool in the last couple of years has been the number of African-American-oriented films getting the Criterion treatment. And a lot of those also have Robert Townsend as an interview subject or conducting interviews, that sort of thing. Earlier this year, he was, of course, one of his, or I think it was Townsend's first role. He was an extra in Cooley High, and he holds a reunion interview with the cast that's on that Criterion DVD and Blu-ray. Claudine, he's the interview subject on that. But also African-American films like Round Midnight, Buck and the Preacher, which I still need to get. It's been cool to see those films getting the Criterion treatment. And Hollywood Shuffle, which I was 17 when that film came out, and it's Townsend playing a young African-American actor who has a chance to get a lead part in a film, but it's a gangster, it's a street hood, the character's not well spoken, and this kind of brings up the blaxploitation problem. Yes, it's work. It can be good work and well paid and get exposed and get you some celebrity, but are they well written characters? So that it tackles that aspect, which for a suburban white kid I needed to watch, because it opens your eyes up a little bit. So I have to give credit to the film for opening my eyes in a very, very funny way. Black acting school, sneaking in the movies. Seeing the film parodies that go throughout that film. Of course, the making fun of the casting director, the white casting director, the white director, and the white writer, all of that. Now, in the commentary track done by Townsend, he also admits there's some stuff that is aged poorly. All the gay jokes are just terrible. And so kudos to Townsend for admitting that. Because we have changed in the last 30-some-odd years, 35 years. I was 17 when this film came out. I saw it a couple of times in the theaters. So, but as far as holding up a mirror to African-American, the image of African-Americans in show business, Still, unfortunately, still holds up at times. So anyway, Criterion, kudos for getting Hollywood Shuffle on DVD and Blu-ray. I forgot. It was one of those I just sat down and watched it and enjoyed the hell out of it. And I called my buddy Chris, who he and I had quoted that film to no end, Winky Dinky Dog. And you forget that Townsend was in that kind of group, the Keenan Ivory Wayans, the post-Eddie Murphy wave of African-American comedy. He was a part of that. You know, and, of course, Townsend directed Eddie Murphy's Raw, the concert film. Okay, also from Film Movement, from Omnibus Entertainment, is a good French-Canadian and Canadian production called A Bag of Marbles. And it is what happens with a family with two siblings when the Nazis invade Paris. And the family wants to get the two boys out of town and into a safer village, and then they will come after them. So it is aspects of films involving the Nazis and World War II that we've seen before. We unfortunately get to see the moments where friends turn on friends because the boys are Jewish. The dad who runs a barber shop. There is a really good tense moment when two Nazi soldiers show up for a haircut, not realizing that they're in an all Jewish barber shop. This does not pay well for dad later on in the film, but we have those aspects. And but the thing that also stuck with me the most with A Bag of Marbles is the relationship between the siblings. They're still young brothers. The oldest is kind of early teens, and the youngest is in his later single digits. Genuinely scared of what's going on in their world, but also being brothers to one another, even as things are going on. There's one of them the youngest gets a blister, and the oldest one will carry him. That's the artwork that's on the cover of this DVD. What also helps is, they get into, eventually get to a free zone in the Vichy or area of France, but the film's not over. And, we see them adapting to work. The boys wind up having to go to a camp and hiding some secrets, when they're at the youth camp. So the film is not entirely about the journey from, Paris to the Vichy France. There's more to it and it still holds up. So, but mostly I was really happy to see the relationship between the two boys, between the brothers. So look for A Bag of Marbles out on Film Movement and Omnibus Entertainment. Okay. Before we get to some gasping, at IU Cinema this weekend, Friday, March 24th, 7 p.m., Diva Worship, Trevor, Flaming Creatures, and Mala Mala, three films that celebrate the role of the diva in queer communities as both entertainers and for queer identity creation. That is happening at 7 o'clock. 10 p.m., Diva Legends Dance Party. It's a dance party, not a film. So, Saturday, March 25th, at 4 o'clock, the documentary All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. Sunday, March 26th, at 1 o'clock, Exposing Muybridge. Tuesday, March 28th at 7 p.m., Shouting Down Midnight. And then Wednesday, March 29th, Performing Memory Through the Archive, Talk Plus Film Screening with Johanna Tesfaye. That's at 4 o'clock, Wednesday, March 29th. Thursday, March 30th at 7 o'clock from 1973 Terminal Island. And then April 1st, Saturday, April 1st, No Fool, and 7 o'clock, Double Exposure 2023. And that is happening at IU Cinema this weekend at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, 2 and 7:30 p.m., the 24th and 25th. Yep, the film adaptation of The Outsiders. Thank you, S.E. Hinton. Thank you, Francis Coppola, for making this and Rumblefish and letting me crap on the John Hughes films, because I watched these films first. I watched The Outsiders and Rumblefish and Tex first. They came out first, and it just kind of soured my image of the John Hughes suburban fairy tales of the mid-1980s. Sorry, not sorry. March 31st and April 1st, 2 and 7:30 p.m., 2001 A Space Odyssey. April 7th and 8th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Glenn Miller Story. And then Thursday, April 13th, 3 and 7 p.m., the Glenn Miller Orchestra performance. So that's fun. And then April 21st and 22nd, 2 and 7:30 p.m. on the big screen, Spirited Away. So that's cool. All right, it is drive-in season in March. Very excited about that. So at the Tibbs Drive-In on screen one, Shazam and Megan, or Mathregan. On screen two, Scream 6 and Cocaine Bear. Screen three, John Wick, Chapter 4 and Operation Fortune. Operation Fortune. And screen four, Creed 3 and I Want to Dance with Somebody. That is happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville, it's John Wick 4 plus Operation Fortune. And mark your calendars for April 28th, The Silence of the Night Returns. That is happening. It's a Buster Keaton and a Felix the Cat film, as well as the film Silence of the Night. That is April 28th at 6 o'clock at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, before we grab a pencil, I had a bonus question this week for you wonderful listeners. I appreciate it. I asked this because I was reminded of the wonderful film Big Night, which, by the way, that's now at the top of my request list for Criterion. So I hope they do that. The fact that within the span of a year, Criterion did Round Midnight and Local Hero, that's, you know, those are two biggies knocked off the list. I'm very excited about that. But there's a moment in Big Night that caused me to gasp, and I will get to that in a minute. So I asked you on Facebook and Twitter a cinematic gasp moment with an audience. It can't be just you. I mean, the audience itself. And I got some really good responses. This was really cool. I will share mine before Big Night. But a few that come to mind. One is in the remake of Shall We Dance, and it was a preview audience. These were all, except for Big Night, they were all preview audiences. So, Full House. And the moment near the end of the film where Richard Gere emerges on camera riding the elevator in a tuxedo with a single long stem red rose, the women, and I'm sure a few dudes, just sucked the oxygen out of the room when that happened, out of the theater. There's two other films that happened with that similar impact. The film Beauty Shop. Yeah, you remember Queen Latifah's Beauty Shop? Yeah. There is a moment where she's knocking on the front door of the apartment of Jimon Hunsu, and he opens the door shirtless. He opens the shirt doorless. And I think for a lot of people, especially the ladies, we knew at that time knew Jimon Hunsu as that, you know, big, intense African guy, and had not seen him without a shirt. And that sucked all the air out of the room. It was funny. And then finally, in the shirtless department, I guess, my now lovely wife, Lynn, the one who lets me call her Mrs. Soci on the radio, we were seeing The English Patient in a suburban theater. And the first time you see Naveen Andrews, not only without his turban, but without a shirt, because he was washing his hair, and his very long hair, and all the suburban housewives just gasped, again, sucked all the air out of the room. It was impressive. It was very impressive. I when I have my long hair, I like to jokingly say, I felt like Naveen Andrews after I shower, and then as soon as it dries, I turn into Lamb Chop. So anyway, those three moments. Also, in seeing American Gangster, when Ruby Dee slaps Denzel. Ruby Dee's playing Denzel's mother in the film, because we had never seen Denzel slapped, glory notwithstanding. But the fact that he is slapped by his mother in the film, and the story behind the backstory to go with that is, or the side story, I should say, when Ruby Dee, she earned an Oscar nomination, and a lot of people said she got the Oscar nomination because she slapped Denzel, but it's a really good performance. But I am friends with her son, the great blues musician Guy Davis, who, by the way, is going to be playing in Yellow Springs in mid-April. So that's a road trip we're taking. But I called Guy when his mom got the nomination, and his response, of course, was, who do you think she was practicing on all these decades? That was fun. But the gasp moment for me that I always remember, and Splice doesn't quite count because it was a combination of, wasn't so much gasping, but it was just a really long, drawn-out laughing of WTF. And if you know the film Splice, you know which scene I'm talking about. But for Big Night, I saw this film in a Chicago suburban multiplex opening weekend, and there was only 12 of us. This was the smallest collective gasp I had heard. I guess that's why I loved it. And it's the first time the moment when they cut open the tympano and they pull out a slice and you see the meats and cheeses and sausages and egg and all of that. I had never seen anything like it, nor did the other 11 people in the theater. We all gasped at that moment. And this was one of the most visually stunning things of the film. And this is a film that has Isabella Rossellini, Allison Janney, and Minnie Driver in a slip coming out of the surf. So, but that was the fact that it was the smallest collective gasp, and all of us responded. It was great. So that's the one I think of when gasping during a film. So again, Criterion, please release Big Night. I would appreciate it. Or to quote William Hurt, I would really a lot appreciate it. All right, so we go to Twitter, and my buddy Emily, it's great, writes, Regina gets hit by a bus in Mean Girls, a gasp immediately followed by giggles. I can understand that. That's cool. Thank you, Emily. We go to Facebook. Gary writes, Tobey Maguire's appearance in Spider-Man No Way Home. Brian Hartz, who's, I need to get him back on the show, yes, writes a certain scene in Alien, yes. Eric writes, my all-time favorite collective gasp happened during the 1983 re-release of Rear Window. The moment when Lisa is signaling she found Mrs. Thorwald's wedding ring and Thorwald sees her doing it and looks up at us/Jeff. When I saw the film again a few weeks later, the new audience also collectively gasped in the exact same place. The power of film, friends. That's a film from the 50s. That is, he saw it in a 1983 re-release. Still holds up. Thank you, Eric. It is a great scene. Allison writes, okay, thank you, Allison. Allison writes, spoilers, because these are old films we're talking about. Harry Potter, Hedwig's death, even though we knew it was coming. Heredity, when the little girl gets decapitated in the car, mostly because it happens with no warning and because it breaks the unwritten movie rule of not showing children being killed. Yeah, there's that. And then Meet Joe Black, when Brad Pitt gets hit by the car. Not going to lie, in later years, I would rewind that scene just to watch his head bounce down the road. So satisfying. Wow. And by the way, thank you, whoever on YouTube, because I sent this to Allison, but somebody put that moment of Brad Pitt getting hit by a car in Meet Joe Black on a loop. So there you go, YouTube. Your pledge dollars at work. more PS from Allison. More spoilers. Signs, when we see the alien walk by the window, and The Ring, when the girl comes out of the TV and when the horse jumps into the water. Okay. Garland also writes, spoilers, The Force Awakens, Han Solo's death. Yeah, okay. Joshua writes, the opening of Saving Private Ryan, when the door of the boat is lowered, and the snap in Avengers Infinity War. Okay, thank you. Jamie writes, spoilers. I love you all are writing spoilers on this. That's fine. I'm not going to lie. Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense got me. I was only 16 at the time, but the moment of realization hit me like a ton of bricks. I was watching with my family in Oklahoma, and my little brother yelled out, wait, he's dead? Again, but that's at home, Jamie. I need a theater experience. But I understand, so you get. But she also writes, also Tony snapping an Endgame. Okay, that's a theater experience. Roxana writes The Crying Game. All right. I get to share my Crying Game story. The Crying Game finally came to Ball State after the Academy Award nominations, as does a lot of films. So I knew it was up for Best Picture. I knew Stephen Ray was up for Best Actor. And I knew and Jay Davison was up for Best Supporting Actor. Okay. This is how young and dumb I was. I saw it in a mall theater near campus. There's a couple of guys. There's three guys behind me. Okay, I don't know if they were frat dudes or locals. It doesn't matter. They were just three terrible guys. And they're and we get to the bar scene. And I'm watching it. And I thought, they nominated the bartender? I mean, he's good. And find out later, it was, before I knew him by name, it was famous English, that guy, Jim Broadbent. No, it's Jim Broadbent did not get a nomination. It was Jay Davison. So, and the guys are making crass remarks at the lady. And then the moment happened. And it took every fiber of my being, because I knew I would probably get beat up, to not turn around and laugh at all three guys. I kind of did a head turn. I did a half head turn and just laughed. Laughed so loud. It was great. Didn't get beat up. Even better. So thank you, Rox. Yeah, that's... David writes, oh, man, I just shot Marvin in the face. If you know, you know. Thank you, Pulp Fiction. Nikki writes, the end of Gone Girl. If you hadn't read the book, I had and was prepared. But from the sound of things, most of the theater hadn't, and they were not happy. Yeah, I still think Rosamund Pike can make me breakfast anytime. Samantha writes, when they completely changed a part in Breaking Dawn, an arrow ripped Carlisle's head off, and that's not a part of the book, and it was Alice's vision, so it wasn't even real. Thank you, Samantha. Thank you so much. Mark writes, Dark Knight, the scene where the semi-truck does a front flip. When the trailer leaped skyward, you could have heard a pin drop in the theater. You could have, if I hadn't been sitting around three rows back from the screen with a giant semi-trailer suddenly somersaulting at my head. Emotion overrode reason, and I did what seemed only natural. I shouted, holy bleep, in an otherwise hushed theater. I don't think Nolan meant for that moment to be in his film to be comedic, but the audience that day sure got a good laugh. That's not a gasp, that's a laugh, but okay. Richard Probst write, when Thelma and Louise decide to keep going. Good. I'm with you on that. I saw it in the theater. I don't remember that. I think probably the biggest gasp in that film would have been Brad Pitt's abs, but anyway. Eric writes, the original Halloween shot is Donald Pleasance in foreground with a window behind him. The audience is sure that Michael Myers is going to appear in the window. Something happens. Suddenly it's a cat jumping and the audience collectively gasps, blanks their pants, and then laughs. One of the most effective jump scares in cinema history. The other is when audiences realize that Bruce Willis is, in fact, dead. Thank you, Eric. A different Eric writes, and this one, you didn't hear a gasp, but I attended a press screening of this film, and you could hear myself and a couple other film critics go, oop, not a gasp, but just oop, because Inglourious Basterds, when Michael Fassbender holds up the wrong three fingers. Although the audience was a group of German speakers who knew what it meant right away, watching it with a general American audience probably would have been a different. It was. So, it was fun watching that moment because things were going to go down. Jared writes, I watched Silence of the Lambs in Calumet City, Illinois, when that popped up on the screen. Okay. Personal, when we watched The Pianist with our boys, ages 11 and 12, when they pushed the wheelchair occupant out of the window, it was the first time I witnessed them be so emotionally involved with a film. Thank you, Jared. Holly writes the last few seconds of Billy Elliot. Oh my God. OMGGGGG. Doug writes, when I read your prompt, I knew immediately. 1975, first run of Jaws, first appearance of the shark coming out of the water. In the same moment, an audience, whole audience gasping, yelling, jumping back in their seats. yep. Terry, and then Terry, great dialogue between Terry and Doug. Also, they write, Terry wrote the Abergast attack in Psycho. Yep. The fact that the Abergast scene, as well as the shower scene and countless other scenes in the Hitchcock canon, can produce such a shared, visceral reaction, even though we know it's coming, really says a lot, doesn't it? One of the marks of Hitchcock's genius, eh? Lucky you to be teaching a class on the Master of Suspense. This is to Doug, my buddy Doug Long. It sounds like you have engaged students, which makes it all the more fulfilling. Thank you, Doug and Terry. I love correspondence on Facebook during film sociology. Because of film sociology, I appreciate it. Spencer writes, The Sixth Sense. Rarely am I surprised with a twist at the end. This one caught me unawares. It was key that M. Night shtick was brand new and I wasn't looking for it, but at the same time, he totally got me. Lou Harry writes, a certain shark attack in Deep Blue Sea. Yep. Joan writes, The Sixth Sense, of course, American Beauty, and Shawshank Redemption. But you got to tell me which ones, please. You got to tell me what moment. Lucy writes, fairly recent early one, but it's the first one that pops up in my mind when Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man shows up in Spider-Man No Way Home. Thank you, Lucy. Brian writes, the scene in Majid's apartment in Michael Haneke's Caché. We saw it at the North American premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival in a 3,000-seat theater, and I swear we nearly created a vacuum from that many people suddenly inhaling that much air simultaneously. Also, the double ending of Nash Edgerton's short film Spider. Thank you, Brian. Nick writes, these moments are always great in children's films, especially when you're in a packed house. There's a terrific instance of kayfabe near the end of Paddington. When it seems sure the bear is doomed to a terrible death, every kid in the auditorium gasped in terror and then shouted in delight when he was saved. Richard Probst chimes in, great insight. These moments are simply a joy with an audience of children. It's the reason I prefer seeing children-targeted films with actual kids. Yeah, thank you, guys. John writes the elevator scene in The Departed. Don writes The Crying Game. Okay, Eric. Eric back. Not a movie, but a television collective gasp moment. But again, you're at home. It's not the same. When Rosalind Shays steps into the empty elevator shaft on L.A. Law. Linda writes, when the shark came up at Chief Brody when he was chumming in. Yeah, in Jaws. Jeez. Eric writes, not exactly a gasp. I'm not asking for it. But the stunned silence at the end of Avengers Infinity War was a pretty cool movie experience. Yeah, but that's not a gasp. Daniel writes, I don't know about the rest of the audience, but a gasp moment which was repeated on subsequent viewings was in Reds when someone pops out of a closet. Don't look now when the person in the red coat turned around. Yeah, that's pretty good. Dustin writes, I remember gasp from myself and fellow audience members in the packed theater during American Sniper. So, I also remember gasping at the end of the film, reading the conclusion of Chris Kyle. Okay. Paige writes, when the Joker made the pencil disappear in The Dark Knight. Yeah, that's harsh. Kurt writes, the appearance of the giant spacecraft over Devil's Tower in Close Encounters. Up until then, they'd mostly been ambiguous lights at best, and there it was, this giant, technically sophisticated thing, and back then they weren't very common on the screen yet. Jeff writes, the death of Comina's wife in The Black Robe. Thank you for mentioning The Black Robe, Jeff. Not appreciated enough. And, Dee Dee, Black Robe. Always Black Robe over Dances with Wolves. You know why. Terry writes, forgive me if these are repeats, but here's what immediately comes to mind. When the shark starts nibbling and then takes down the first victim in Jaws, when Mrs. Bates comes storming out of the bedroom, slashing Martin Balsam's private eye character in Psycho, and I'm your father in Star Wars. I get it. That's cool. Daniel writes the very end moment in The Skin I Live In when it cuts to black. That's good. Heather writes Hard Candy, kind of the whole movie, but one character tying another to a table and operating on them caused a very interesting combination of audible gasp and laughter in the theater, and then people gasping at the people who responded by laughing. Yes, that's true. Kelly writes, oddly enough, the one that came to my mind was not a scary moment, but the end of Dumb and Dumber when Carrie and Daniels turned down the jobs lotioning up bikini models or something, telling them to try the next town over, wave goodbye. And then Carrie suddenly runs back to them shouting, wait, wait, audience is totally still. The town we were telling you about is that way. It wasn't even a roar of laughter that resulted from a crowd, more of a horrified gasp. All right, thank you, Kelly. Thank you for that. Chris writes when Black Widow sacrifices herself in Avengers Endgame. Andy writes, everyone in the theater, myself included, gasped when Nick Jonas was bitten by a mosquito in Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Frank writes Darth Vader's confession. And then Kelly jumps back when Rote leaps out of the darkness in at Audrey Hepburn in Wait Until Dark. I dare anyone not to gasp at that one. I've seen the play, so I understand. Doug writes Wizard of Oz when Toto pulls the curtain back, revealing. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Cousin Doug. Adrian writes the pastoral picnic scene in Cabaret. It begins with a fair-skinned youth sweetly singing Tomorrow Belongs to Me, then widens into an assembly of uniformed Nazi youth. The song continues, but with a hard, dangerous edge. I remember a collective, Sam Watermeyer writes, I remember a collective woe at Keystone Art Cinemas when Batman flips the bat cycle off a wall in The Dark Knight. Okay. Janet writes, when Joe Black gets hit by a car in Meet Joe Black. Kim writes, also a Jaws moment when the head pops out of the hull of the boat, causing Hooper to drop the tooth slash proof. And me to chomp through a sour apple Jolly Rancher I was eating. And the original Carrie scene with sweet Amy Irving paying her respects. Ultimate jump scare. But is there a collective gasp? So, all right, there you go. There's some gasping moments there. Thank you, gang. That was cool. So, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. So, and you know what? Those are probably, if you haven't grabbed the pencil yet, You can write those, because there's a few of those titles that are on my list of movies I've purchased and I just have not gotten around to. So I will have to get to that. All right. So here's the official. That was the unofficial grab a pencil. Here's the official grab a pencil portion. We start with, and you're going to hear some of the usual suspects again, with Lou Harry, who writes Godfather 1 and 2 and half of Sharper. Only half, friends. Not the whole. Doug writes, foreign correspondent, Gigi, The Apartment, Charade, Tom Sawyer. Oh, hold on, I'm going to get to that. The original Murder on the Orient Express, Encino Man, which he writes after the Oscars, I had to, and In the Heights. I'm adding it to my movie musicals class. So, yes, a lot of people are now watching Encino Man because two of the actors from Encino Man now have Academy Awards. 1973 Tom Sawyer. Doug, I was at Classical Revolution. All right, shameless plug, friends. Classical Music Indie, wonderful organization. They have a great music event. It's one of my favorite music events in the city. It's called Classical Revolution. It happens in other cities, but this is ours. The first Tuesday of the month at the Chatterbox on Mass Ave. Wonderful jazz venue. Some of the players from the ISO, from the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, will go to the Chatterbox and play classical music on their little tiny stage. It's one of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorites. So you can hear, it brings, you don't have to wear a tux, you don't have to wear a dress, you can talk and drink and enjoy classical music in a very casual environment. It's one of my favorite things. So this month, or earlier this month, I was at I was at Classical Revolution. Normally, there is sports ball going on the telly in the back. But it was Tom Sawyer. It was the night early in the evening. It was because Jodie Whittaker's in it, Jodie Foster. What was even better for me was by the end of the evening, the 1950s black and white version of Julius Caesar with Marlon Brando was on. So we were really classy. We were already there. So thank you, Doug. Dustin writes, The Freshman, Caesar and Cleopatra, Flower Drum Song, Animal House, Milk, and Shazam Fury of the Gods. Jeff writes, The Truman Show. David writes, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, Quantumania, All Quiet on the Western Front, and Rogue One. Eric says he's got a rock. Cute. Helen writes, The Girl on the Train. Eric writes, I moved this week, so it was all about keeping the movie diet familiar. There were two TCM 31 Days of Oscar Impulse rewatches, Johnny Belinda and Rear Window. And a revisit of Michael Cimino's Heaven's Gate on the Criterion Channel, which is both not as bad as they say it was back then and not as good as they say it is now. I'm with you, I think, on that, Eric. It is a gorgeous film. It's I think it's a really well done two hour film, maybe two and a half. It's like John Wick, you don't need it at three. But yeah, So it is, and I love the fact that it's got the Criterion treatment, but yeah, it's still a flawed piece. Rebecca writes Family. Jessica writes The Final Wish and Euro Trip. Abdul writes, hey, Abdul, you know, Abdul Kishvaz writes Shazam. The Billy Batson Easter egg was most interesting. Thank you. Then thank you for not giving that away. Rachel writes, The Story of Robin Hood and His Merry Men and Star Wars The Phantom Menace. Jamie writes Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, Reminiscent, and For Richer, For Poorer. Amanda writes Bono and The Edge, A Sort of Homecoming with David Letterman, The Age of Adeline, Fruitvale Station, Encino Man, and The Outsiders. Very good. Chris writes Cinderella Man. Nancy writes The Quiet Girl. Kevin writes Exposing Muy Bridge, the documentary. Allison writes The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, The Menu, and Don't Worry, Darling. Allison, good time on that. My family, we finally got to watch The Menu over the weekend. Last weekend, we got to go visit our kid up in Chicago, and it took us two evenings, but we watched it and enjoyed it, despite its content. So it was cool. I have this image of that cast in their spare time doing As You Like It. So we'll see. Or some other Shakespeare. Jay writes, we watched Bono and the Edge documentary with David Letterman, and it was really good. Brian writes, first time viewings. Scream 6, Mathregan, that was at the Tibbs. And then John Wick 2 and 3, catching up before hitting Tibbs this weekend. Not too impressed with franchise so far. Well, you got one more, John Brian, so we'll see. We'll see about that. Taylor writes Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Star Trek, Here Comes Mr. Jordan, and Charade. Abby writes Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, and Eye of the Beholder, The Art of Dungeons and Dragons. Tom writes Everything Everywhere All at Once, entertaining, but best film? Yes, Tom, best film. It was my number one film this year, Tom, so that's why you get such a strong response from me. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, loaded but with fun cameos. It's a weird movie. Yes, it is, but still cool. And finally from Tom. Cotton Comes to Harlem, one of the better blaxploitation movies, and Godfrey Cambridge rocks. Yes, I'm hoping Comeback Charleston Blue gets a release sometime soon, I hope. But yeah, I do like Cotton Comes to Harlem. And you can hear Cotton Comes to Harlem being treated on Golden Globus Theater, their podcast. It's an old show. But this week they are doing Malibu Express for you fans of Andy Sedaris. You know who you are. Some of you have Andy Sedaris on Blu-ray, or it was sent to you. You know who you are. I know who I am. Gary writes, The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed-Up Zombies. Well done. The Original King Kong, the Mystery Science Theater treatment of the Rebel set, and Sweet Sweetback's badass song. Thank you, Gary. David writes on another plane movie week, on a flight to London, Strange World and the Real Chaplin. And on the return, an Indiana Jones marathon, only the first three. So don't hide in the fridge. Robert Muggy writes, Room with a View, Persona, Three Women, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Watched everything again because my wife bought a 4K Blu-ray copy. The film is certainly worthy of repeat viewings, each of which reveals more. Thank you, Robert. I agree with you. Rachel writes, all four of The Hunger Games, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and The Lake House. Kelly writes, The Window, from 1949. Daniel writes, The Whale, Puss in Boots, The Thin Man, The Third Man, Charade, Laura, Vertigo, Rear Window, Murder on the Orient Express, Wuthering Heights, we don't know which ones, The Darkest Hour, and The House by the River. Thank you, Daniel. Terry writes Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quattromania, Claire's Knee, and There's Always Tomorrow. And finally, Brian writes 1990 The Bronx Warriors. Thank you, Fred Williamson. As well as David and Lisa, Wild Seed, and This is Spinal Tap. And that's it, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to see some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And now you have a myriad of titles if you want to gasp in your house. It's not a theater, but most of you got the bit. So, but yeah, now you have films that you can gasp over if you would like to do that. All right, friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie, you deserve it. There's plenty out there. Also, gosh, shameless plug, the fourth annual Hoosier Films Festival from Hoosier Films is happening March 24th through the 26th at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington. So go check that out. Go to HoosierFilms.com. And check out all the information. Let me see. I will. Let me read the festival schedule because I can do that. Tonight, 4 o'clock, 4 to 6, VIP and filmmaker meetup at the Buskirk Chumley. 7 o'clock is the feature film It Happened One Weekend and a VIP reception at 8:30. Saturday, March 25th at 10 a.m., short films. The subject is Reflections. 1 o'clock, there's a lunch break. And then 1 o'clock, short films. Mask is the theme. And then at 3 o'clock, short films, Trapped. Then there's a dinner break. And then the feature film at 7 o'clock is Cold Cross, VIP reception at 9:15. On Sunday, March 26th at 10 a.m., short films, the subject is Driven. Then there is a lunch break. The feature film at 1 o'clock is Pursuit of Freedom. And then at 3:30 p.m., the awards ceremony and closing reception. All of this at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in Bloomington as a part of the fourth annual Hoosier Films Festival. So go to HoosierFilms.com for all the information. And tell them Film Sociology sent you. And there you go. So thank you, gang. Hope you got some. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Go see a film that makes you gasp. Go check out Golan Globus's treatment of Malibu Express. Someone's got to cover Andy Sedaris, and I already did it. So anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll do this again next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!